Hello everyone and welcome to Amanpour. Here's what's coming up.
If we are now going to start judging what other members have said before they're even members of Congress, I think it's going to be a hard time for the Democrats to place anybody on committee.
Whether to weed out extremists in the GOP. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson joins me on his party's existential crisis. Then,
omkring klokken 19:00 sejlede ud i en hjembygget ubåd i forbindelse med et interview, men er ikke vendt hjem som aftalt.
New on HBO, The Investigation, the bizarre murder case of the Swedish journalist Kim Wall. I talked to her parents and to director Tobias Lindem about honoring Wall's quest for truth.
Welcome to the program, everyone. I'm Christiane Amanpour in London. President Biden continues to assert his leadership at home and around the world with a major foreign policy address and, of course, rafts of domestic directives, not least on COVID and the vaccine rollouts. But his underlying appeal to unity is hitting early obstacles, from the bailout bill for American families to raw politics. Indeed, across the aisle, the Republicans are in a highly divisive and very public fight for the soul of their own party. House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy has refused to strip a member who embraces QAnon conspiracy theories of her committee assignments. And despite her shocking endorsements of violence against Democrats and fanning the flames of the Capitol Hill insurrection. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi criticized the Republican leadership about this.
I remain profoundly concerned about House Republicans' leadership acceptance of extreme conspiracy theorists. Particularly disturbing is their eagerness to reward a QAnon adherent, a 9/11 truther, a harasser of child survivors of school shootings, and to give them valued committee positions, including who could imagine they would put such a person on the Education Committee.
Now, the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, has slammed the new GOP Congresswoman's, quote, loony lies and calls them a cancer on his party. So where does the GOP stand? Who better to ask than the Republican governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson? He's a former three-term congressman. He was undersecretary at the Department of Homeland Security under President George W. Bush, and he was an impeachment manager in the case against President Clinton. Welcome, Governor, from Little Rock, Arkansas. Thank you for being with us today. Can I turn to something that's super important and obviously was determinative during this last election, and that is obviously COVID in the United States and the vaccine rollout. Your state seems to be doing better with deaths and cases coming down and vaccines rolling out. Just give me a picture of how it's going in Arkansas.
Well, it is going well, even though we have a limited supply of the vaccine. And as long as that is limited, it's going to be slower than we'd like. But we are doing well. We're getting over 60% of our doses out very quickly. Whenever it's a first dose, we get it into the arms within 72 hours of when it gets here into the state. And we're getting better and better at it every day. We continue want to improve. And I applaud the fact that with the Biden administration, we now have a 16% increase in our vaccine supply, followed by another 5% that's going to be increased late this week. And so that will help us to do more. But our cases are going down. People have to continue to make sure, one, they take the vaccine when it is their turn and realize that it is safe and it is necessary. And then secondly, until the vaccine is widely distributed, we have to continue to be disciplined with wearing a mask, socially distancing. We're trying to do that here in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. You are, I guess, one of the rare Republicans who publicly has praised what you've called the seamless vaccine, you know, efforts under this new administration. And you've said that you have a pretty good partnership with the federal government. You probably know that President Trump's own pollsters, the former president, in the autopsy on his loss in November, essentially attributed to his mishandling of the COVID crisis. I mean, the very fact of life and death was at stake. So how do you compare, let's say, as governor of your state, you know, the previous administration's handling of this and the current administration's? What are the big structural differences you see?
Well, that's a great question. And when I referred to it as being a seamless transition, it's really a compliment to the professionals on the Trump administration coronavirus task force as they handed off to the Biden administration. And it's been seamless, and that's important for the states because we don't want that supply chain to be interrupted. And there absolutely is differences in style and leadership and comments from the presidential level. But if you look underneath that to the professionals, to the vice president's leadership, Vice President Pence on the coronavirus task force, and with what's happening under President Biden, it is the same level of commitment, professionalism, understanding the importance of getting the vaccines out, accelerating the production. And so I'm sure that there will be differences, but from a governor's standpoint, it was critical that they hand this off well, and I think that's been done. Obviously, I asked the Biden administration, well, how are we getting this new supply? Did you just find it somewhere? And of course, I said that jokingly, but the answer is, just like we get better in the states, the manufacturers get better as well, improve their processes. So I hope that supply continues to increase.
And again, you complimented the Biden administration for seamless distribution of the vaccine. So I want to ask you what you're thinking. I know you're a governor and this is happening in Congress and with the White House, but this $1.9 trillion, basically the bailout bill for hurting American families, where do you think it's going to land? And I just want to play, because obviously there's some, you know, pushback from Republicans. They want it smaller or differently targeted. But this is what the Republican governor of Virginia has said about this moment now.
Trying to be, per se, fiscally responsible at this point in time, with what we've got going on in this country, if we actually throw away some money right now, so what? We have really got to move and get people taken care of and get people back on balance. And I want to work with the Biden administration just like I worked with the Trump administration, and I want us to move forward.
So, of course, I misspoke. It's the Governor Jim Justice of West Virginia, as you clearly know better than me. So where do you stand on this coronavirus relief bill? Where do you think it's going to land?
Well, more importantly than going big, we need to go reasonable on it. And I think it is a fair debate as to exactly the dollar amount that should be contained in the relief package. Everyone agrees that the states need money for vaccine administration. We need additional funds in terms of education, keeping our schools open. We need to also make sure that we provide relief for small businesses that are still hurting. And the stimulus checks are important. But at the same time, there is a fair debate as exactly how large that package should be and make sure it goes to the right people. And for the Biden administration to say, we're just going to stick with our plan. We're not going to seek compromise with the Republican side, I think is short-sighted. For example, in Arkansas, we have right now a $240 million surplus. We have a 4.9% unemployment rate. And so our economy is doing well. We don't need $1.9 trillion to boost the economy right now. We need a smaller amount to do that with the assistance to the states. So I think we have to be common sense about this and recognize that it's borrowed money, and we need to be careful about exactly the amount that we borrow and we send out to the states for these needs.
Understood that sometimes it has to be carefully targeted, but really interesting to hear major economists across all sorts of even the IMF and wherever you look, including in the United States, say that it's never been a better time to lend money. There is just so much at good rates right now. Can I ask you, though, about your own party? So you kind of stand out in the Republican firmament of having acknowledged 2 days before the Capitol Hill insurrection and when Biden's election victory was meant to be certified, you said Joe Biden is our president-elect. You attended the inauguration, you spoke, as we've just talked about, to his transition team, and you've pretty much been following the constitutional playbook. Do you feel somewhat out of step with your party when you see how the majority of Republicans in the House, which you used to be a member of, voted not to certify his election and all the stuff that's going on now? Where do you think you fit in the regular Republican Party?
Well, I don't feel out of step at all. I do believe that the Republican Party needs to return more to its roots. We need to make sure that we concentrate on sound fiscal policy, less regulation, and growing the private sector of our economy, things that have really brought people together within the Republican base. We've got sidetracked in the last 4 years, but with a very dominant personality, and that has created division. The election has created division within our party and how we've responded to it. And so I don't feel out of step, but I do believe I want to, without any question, engage in the debate to help lead the Republican Party back to its roots. That's a fight that is important for us. And what's happening in Congress, both on the Senate side with the impeachment trial and on the House side with the debate about a member who offered these atrocious comments that I reject, that the party should reject, that is the debate that's going to go on for some time. But we need to get back to our roots, and we need to get away from that extremist element that has moved our country in the wrong direction in some areas.
So let me just talk about this member who you've just mentioned. Atrocious comments, you say you reject them. As we said, the Senate minority leader, Republican Mitch McConnell, has called them loony lies, a cancer on the party. And yet the House, where she's a member, seems to be trying to have it all ways. The Republicans are not censuring her, and they are also coming to the support of the moderate, traditional Republican who's been under great fire, and that is Liz Cheney, who comes from a top-notch Republican pedigree, obviously, with her family history. Can you have it always? Can you really have your Republican Party and this loony, as we might call it now, the loony right, as they used to say, the loony left, gaining so much strength and power?
Well, the fact that Liz Cheney defended her vote for the impeachment as a vote of conscience, that they retained her in leadership, shows that you can differ from others and still have a vote of conscience like this. So I think this speaks very well of our Republican conference and the fact that they have embraced and understand the importance of the liberty of Liz Cheney in her vote. In terms of the other congresswoman that has said these things that are outlandish, that's a different category because those are statements that have hurt people, that have misrepresented our party, and have been disavowed. In fact, she has now had to disavow them herself. That's a tough call because she's elected. You don't want to deprive a district of representation, but also a seat on a committee. But we've done that in the past. I know that back in the 2000s that we, as a Republican Party, took the committee assignments away from Steve King for statements that he made. And so it is a different environment now. For my vote, I would say that she should be not on those committees simply because we've got to distance ourselves from those kind of comments that are conspiratorial, that are hurtful, and embrace violence.
Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to hear you say that as one of the grandees of the Republican Party. And yes, she did have to come and do a mea culpa, knowing that the House was going to vote and that the Democrats had the votes and that, she was going to be voted off these committees. And she did not denounce this QAnon. She, in fact, equated it with the media. She played the victim. She did the whole, nine yards as usual. So it's really interesting to hear what you say. But I want to also just push you a little bit. Because I want to ask you, you used to be a U.S. attorney. I said you were in the Department of Homeland Security. You've had many, many major important government jobs over your career and elected jobs. I think I heard you say that 4 years of allowing President Trump to finally end up with this Capitol insurrection may not have been wise. And I guess I'm trying to figure out whether you think the head of the snake of this QAnon new generation needs to be cut off now before it becomes unmanageable.
Well, absolutely. If you're talking about QAnon, we reject that.
And those who support it. I'm sorry, this woman who supports it. Any elected official who supports it.
I don't know if you can make that judgment carte blanche, but I wouldn't want anyone that embraced that conspiratorial theories to represent me. I would not vote for them. I would not want them to be associated with our party. Now, let me go back to President Trump, though. He was good on policy. He did a lot of good things for the Republican cause, for America, that I fully, fully support. And I don't want to distance myself from those things. I embrace those things. But in terms of how the election was handled, how it misled Americans that the election was stolen from him, we're still reaping damage from that. And that's what we've got to remedy very quickly and make sure we're not going to go down that path again.
Mm-hmm. Look, I'm going to push you again because the former Senator John Danforth, of course, another lion of the Republican Party, has said that your party has become, quote, a gross caricature of what the Republican Party has traditionally been. And I know you say Donald Trump has been good for policy in some of the instances that you mentioned, but he also launched a major attack on the Constitution and on your own democracy. So where do you think the party is headed? When you see all this, plus the impeachment that's going to happen, or, you know, the trial, rather, in the Senate, where do you see this landing, and how long do you think it's going to take to iron out these issues within your party, to make it, you know, a two-party system like it's meant to be in the United States, as opposed to unelectable, as we saw in the last election?
Well, first of all, the Republican Party had a very good election cycle, increasing representation in our state legislators, in Congress, the Senate we split. And so other than losing the top position of president, we had a very good election cycle. We are going to go through a very difficult 2 to 4 years because these are going to be primary issues. It's going to be fighting for the heart and soul of our party. There's going to be division there. There's going to be primary contest. And the next couple of weeks are going to be challenging because people are going to have to express themselves in these issues in the United States Senate. And so, but the history of the Republican Party has been diminished in times past. They say we're not going to survive an election. We do. We're going to be a major player in the next, we're going to win whenever you look down the road, because the American people do embrace the conservative philosophy that we offer. They just do not want to have us dominated by extremism, and that's what we've got to avoid in the coming 2 years.
Mm-hmm. You lost the White House, you don't have the House, you pretty much don't have the Senate, and you lost Georgia. These were pretty big losses that many are putting at Donald Trump's doorstep. But can I ask you this? You are not running again. You've coming up to the end of your second term. You're unable under the Constitution of your state to run again. And Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who, as we remember, was President Trump's White House press spokeswoman, she's running. She's the daughter of a former Arkansas governor. She's raised a lot of money already. But she was known to be one of the least truthful adherents to facts and truth during her time on the podium. Do you support her candidacy? Will you vote for her?
Well, I've got 2 years left in my term. I'm going to concentrate on that. Yes, the election has started for 2022. There's three candidates in there now. There's likely to be more. I'm going to stay out of it. That's probably the smartest move I've made politically for some time. And they're going to have a hard-fought contest in the primary. And presumably in the general election, I expect the seat to stay Republican after I leave the governorship. And I know the people of Arkansas will decide that issue.
So kind of yes or no, if she's the candidate, you'll vote for her?
Well, I'm not going to say who I will vote for. That's 2 years away, and I'm not taking sides in that election. And so we'll wait and see how the campaign goes. But I'm neutral on that.
Right.
I'm not taking sides on it. There's some really good candidates that are offering themselves.
And it was extraordinary for all of us as members of the press to watch her, you know, really wage this war on truth throughout her time on the podium. Anyway, I didn't hear a ringing endorsement from you, Governor, so thank you very much for your perspective. Really valuable. You've said some really interesting things this evening to us. Governor Asa Hutchinson, thanks for joining us from Little Rock. Now, we turn next to a gruesome murder that shocked the world back in 2017, and it is now the basis for HBO's gripping new series, The Investigation. 30-year-old Swedish journalist Kim Wall went missing after she boarded a homemade submarine in Copenhagen to interview its designer. Her work had appeared in the New York Times, The Guardian, Vice, and elsewhere. Now, this series is not so much a crime drama, but an investigative drama. Here's a clip from the trailer. Now, the Oscar-nominated writer-director Tobias Lindholm created The Investigation with close collaboration from Kim Wall's parents, Joachim and Ingrid Wall. And all three are joining me now. And I just want to say welcome to all of you. I believe the Walls are in Sweden, and Tobias, I believe you're in Denmark. Thank you very much for being with us. And I really do want to say from the bottom of my heart, for all of us in the press, we have so much sympathy for you, and we offer still our condolences on the death of your daughter, who was a great journalist. So I just want to ask you, Ingrid and Joachim, why you decided, and what was it about Tobias's pitch that made you want to go into this filming and reliving of this terrible, terrible episode?
During the time from August 2017, there's been more than 100,000 articles written about this horrible case, but Kim isn't in the story at all, and we are so thankful for all the people who made their absolute effort to that we could bring Kim home again. So we see this TV series as an honor to all these men and women that do their utmost so that we could have Kim back and bury her here at home.
In some way.
And Joachim, what are your views?
It's we didn't give any interviews, nothing. And at the time, the search for Kim was going on. And it's the same as Ingrid said, it's so many things has been written about this case, but not about Kim, who she was, what she has done, and so on. And the effort of all those people that has done it possible to get the murder victim, we would like to give them the thank you for that.
And it's also important for us that Kim is portrayed as a journalist, not as a crime victim. She was a journalist on an assignment. She was passing.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and that was very, very, definitely very prominent in the series. So let me ask you, Tobias Lindholm. I mean, the murder was gruesome. I hesitate even to speak about it, but her torso was dismembered, her legs were, and her arms were all found separately, her head, and it was a terrible, terrible, terrible shock for the whole world and obviously for her family. What was it that made you want to really get to the bottom of this investigation? And what was your connection? Obviously, Jens Muller, the head of homicide in Copenhagen, played a huge role.
Well, as everybody else in Denmark, I followed this story unfold in the press back in the late summer of 2017, and I quite fast turned my back to it because it felt like that the media was reproducing a plot from a crime show that I had seen 100 times before. I just, you know, as everybody else, I felt great sympathy with the people involved, but I didn't find any interest in following obsession with the darkness that I saw in both local and international press. And not until I met Jens Møller, who was the chief investigator of Copenhagen Homicide back then, and he told me suddenly his story of this case, I realized that that darkness that had been described in so many details in the press, that darkness had a light inside of it. It had a story about a system that worked, a society that stood together. It had a beautiful story about a friendship between Jens and Ingrid and Joachim. It had a story about their strength. And it had a story about people in uniform who basically just did their job to help complete strangers. And I realized that by telling that story, we could change perspective and hopefully regain the respect in this story that had been told so many times in my mind, a strange way.
Well, the humanity of it really comes out loud and clear. And the connection between, you know, he's a really straight-laced professional homicide chief and Joachim and Ingrid was amazing. So I want to play this little clip, which shows a little bit their relationship and his determination to continue the investigation.
It started with that someone laid a stone and then it became a heart to Kim. Jag blev fler och fler och då så växte jag. Nu lägger nästan alla som går förbi en sten.
Har du visst inget om?
Nej.
Tens?
So Ingrid and Joachim, it really shows, and actually so much of the series shows, how many obstacles the investigation came up, despite all the efforts. But it also shows your relationship. Those were the actors playing you, the parents. Describe to me what it was like for you to make this connection with the homicide chief and how you got through what was a very, very painful many, many months until they were able to crack the case.
It was 111 very long days and even longer nights before the entire Kim was found. And it was a very strange feeling to have this relation with Jens, because as in the beginning it was very strict professional, and then somewhere we found each other, as we are about the same age,
I've done many phone calls to Jens, and he had done the same thing back to me, and we have been discussing what's going on and what we could do, and what I asked him, what have you done, and suggested something maybe, and he could tell me, yes, we have already thought about that then. And he always was very, very clear of getting message to us in the first place. Mm-hmm. When he planned for a press conference and he had many of them, then he called us before and said, now I will tell the press this and this, but I will not give them this. And he trusted us that we shut up and don't say anything to anybody. And he got trust in us and we got trust in him. And that grows to a big friendship from us to him.
And in real life, Joachim and Ingrid, I think that you're the ones, I think it was you who told Jens, the real life detective, homicide chief, about using cadaver dogs, special cadaver dogs to actually go out into the water and sniff where they could to see if they could find your daughter's remains. You are the ones that brought that up, right?
Yes. I had one of our many telephone calls with Jens, and he was said about that the divers were nearby giving up. And I asked him, because they didn't have any, it's a huge place to look for things underwater, and it takes time, and they have been diving so much. And then I asked him, have you tried to take special trained corpse dogs, dogs that are trained to sniff human being, human leftover? And he said, no, we don't have that kind of dogs. And I knew from my work, so I knew that we have it in Sweden. So I asked him, should you or should I tell the police to get over from Sweden to Denmark? And he said, no, no, I will call them. But I called the Swedish police as well.
It was extraordinary to see how that actually, that was the trick, that did it for the discovery of your daughter's remains. Tobias, so much about your cast, about the film, obviously the collaboration with the Walls is real. Even you had real divers. Tell me about using as actors or extras the people who actually were real professionals and may have taken part in the real investigation.
Well, many of them was part of the real investigation. And well, the simple truth is that you know, divers dive better than actors, and actors act better than divers. And in this case, I was allowed to have both in. I took a chance, and I called them to see if they wanted to be part of this, and they definitely did. They felt a pride in the work that they had done, and they also felt that, you know, by doing this, they would pay respect to the job that was done back then. So they came in, and you know, from a artist's point of view, I felt that if I wanted to keep on track and make sure that I didn't start to reproduce the stories that were already told in the press, I needed to have as many elements from reality that I could get. So we did get the real divers, the real Swedish special trained police dogs, the real ships, and even luckily the real Isoval. The dog of Ingrid and Joachim that played itself. So yes, we did have quite a lot of real elements in the show.
Mm-hmm. And you had, you know, you were very painstaking in laying out the investigation. You know, it's over six parts, and it was extraordinary. First to see the divers and how they just kept at it and they wouldn't give up, but also to see the, you know, the detectives, that woman who was key to Jens Moller's team, who went, they kept going over and over the evidence. What have we missed? Because what we haven't said is that the prosecutor felt that he still didn't have the evidence, despite everybody knowing that this guy did kill Kim. He simply didn't have it beyond a reasonable doubt for court. And it was one of these young women or young investigators who found the inconsistency. I like the tribute you paid to the hard work of the investigators.
It meant everything to me to do a story that would celebrate their work. These are the unsung heroes of our society. And I think that, you know, these years we spend a lot of time talking about our society not working, reminding each other of things that makes us different as human beings. And I felt that getting to know these people and realize the job they did reminded me that that there are more things that connect us as human beings than things that separate us. So it made it very important to be loyal to the work. And you know, basically, I feel that many crime shows or the genre in general misses the opportunity of getting to know what's actually going on. I mean, we have a scientist who tells us about currents around the waters in Denmark. We get to understand how these dogs works and everything. And for me, that's extremely important too, from a scientific point of view, understand the world that we are part of. And we could tell that by by, you know, throwing our camera in their direction.
Yeah. It was really effective, really, really effective, and actually gripping. Let me ask you again, Ingrid and Joachim, about your daughter's legacy. You know, we know what a immensely trained and productive journalist was. You know, she was at the LSE here in the UK. She was at Columbia School of Journalism in New York. She was at the Sorbonne. As I said, she was printed in many different outlets. And one of the moving last aspects in the film is when you, Ingrid, you talk to a class of youngsters about your daughter's legacy, about her journalism, and that leads you to create a foundation for her. I just want to play this extract from the film.
Kim blev en duktig journalist. Hon brann att berätta om världens orättvisor och skönhet. Hon ville bevisa att en flicka från utkanten av Trelleborg kan växa upp och göra skillnad i en mansdominerad medievärld och göra andra människor klokare på sig själva och varandra genom att berätta historier från.
So Ingrid, you actually wrote that speech along with Tobias. This is something that really meant a lot to you because it was about your daughter and her legacy. Tell me, because it was really noticeable, obviously, that her journalism was a huge part of the series and obviously her life. And you've created a memorial fund in her name, right?
Yes, we did that one of the first horrible days and nights after Kim was had disappeared. We decided that this shouldn't be the end. In some way, we have to. Kim's legacy should live on, and we asked a lot of. Kim has friends all over the world, and we asked several of them, and they said, "Of course, this is a good idea." And we worked together with IWMF, that I know you are very familiar with, and
yes.
And so far we have let 6 young female journalists going out in the world and making stories in Kim's spirit. And right now we are in the final selection of this year's grantee, and there are so many good stories out there. And by helping other female journalists going out and do these stories and let the world know, we know that Kim will live on through the fund and through other female journalists' work.
It's really effective. And I just want to close with Tobias, because he also, you made this about a quest for the truth. You made Kim's journalism a big part of your series, but it was about finding the truth. And it's such an important message always, but especially today, Tobias.
Yes, and thank you. It was important for me, you know, this is not a series about Kim. It's about the investigation. I knew that in this case, the journalist Kim Wahl was the victim, and we didn't want to make a show about her, but we knew that talking about her, we had to do it with respect. And there was so much to respect. And then to meet Ingrid and Joachim, we felt honored of the opportunity to enlighten everybody with who Kim actually also was.
Mm-hmm. Well, it really does show, and is an extraordinary series. To you, Ingel and Joachim Wahl, thank you for joining us, and Tobias Lindem as well. And of course, what we know in real life is that the killer was sentenced to life in prison, and you never mentioned his name at all, and we never saw him, and that was very powerful as well. Thank you both so much. Thank you, all of you, for joining us. And that is it for now. You can always catch us online, on our podcast, and across social media. Thank you for watching, and goodbye from London.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 Smart Bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.